CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. We in Johannesburg, South Africa. Cliff Central have just redone our main studio. It is magnificent. New speakers, the same Palesa, the same Lidl, same researcher Benji, same me, but the studio is glorious. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you very much, Gary, and welcome to our guest. The legendary is in the house. But you'll do the introduction.
Yeah. Today we have a special man. His name is Dennis Beckett. Who doesn't know Dennis? He's a legal eagle by qualification, advocate turned writer, journalist, columnist, commentator. Who can forget that marvelous series that he did called Beckett's Trek? Welcome to you, Dennis.
Thank you. Nice to be here. And I didn't know that this was a brand new studio, but I have to say I got a good impression.
Yeah, we've had the studio for a number of years, but it's been refurbished. Gareth Cliff and Rena Brumberg have put some money into this, so it's very nice of them. Well, great.
Yeah, it has a good feel.
Yeah, it is. Lange, you want to give out some detail?
Oh, yes. If you really have any comments and you would like us to feature any of your favorite personalities in South Africa, you can do so by touching base with us on our WhatsApp?
Twitter handle.
Oh, Twitter handle, which is @HertzLaw, HERTZLAW. Or you can actually email us.
You'll law, do the email. Law, LAW, at cliffcentral.com. Yes. And then our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertz.
Please do like our page and do give us your comments and feedback in terms of how we are doing. If you really do feel that we need to improve something or you love our status, please just like our page. Thank you very much.
Dennis Beckett is described as one of South Africa's finest writers and journalists, a perennial optimist with a keen eye, sharp wit, and enormous affection for South Africa, as we all know. You started your career in law, of all things, and then you defected.
I quite like this description, wherever it comes from.
You went to WITS and you did an LLB.
Yes, I did an LLB. I got admitted, and that was as far as I've gone. So, you would well know, the legal system working on a seniority basis, I'm probably now technically the most senior junior in the country.
You said there was less money and status, but... In being a journalist, but it's stood you
in good
stead. You've loved every second of it.
It works for me. I particularly enjoy having no. Don't have to come to conclusions that anybody else looks for. I can come to entirely my own. That's the great beauty of journalism. It's a very rare thing, by the way. Yeah. There are not many professions where you are, like, paid to find your own answers.
Dennis Beckett, you in close to 70, I believe. You don't look it.
Yeah, but, I'm past.
Oh,
I am 70, but I mean, the birthdays happened not long ago.
Do you have any regrets about having missed out on the legal field in law?
No, I don't think I regret that. There's various regrets. One is that I've spent far too much time on one particular project that I'll probably talk to you about later. I mean, I kind of kicked myself several times about that. Yeah. So I'm not saying that there's no regrets, but I'm not. I knew before I finished studying law, I knew that I wasn't going to practice law. And I said to my dad halfway through my last year, in fact, I said, look, let's quit. And he said, we make a deal. In fact, maybe it wasn't my last year. It was a year and a half to go. Mm-hmm. And he said, do it and then do what you want. And so that precisely happened. And he respected me doing what I want. And I was happy to not do law.
The Mail and Guardian have termed you, they say, Beckett is at heart a controversialist. What does that mean, really? Are you?
That comes from Beeld. Beeld called me, that gave me a column a long, long time ago called, and they called it, it was something like Fechlustig. Fechlustig. He wants to fight. And that was because they'd made me a kind of a, Beeld in those days was a government supporting newspaper technically, and I was by no means a government supporting guy. And I was their honorary, like, liberalist. Columnist, and they called it Fechlustig, and so that Fechlustig became quite a thing. But I'm not really fechtlustig. I just want to stand up for what I want to stand up for, and that's all. It's, and if it's, there's some guys who are contrarians by nature, by purposefully contrarians. Yeah, that whatever you say, they'll say
everyone.
The opposite.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will only
yeah.
say the opposite if I believe the opposite. But if I do believe the opposite, I won't, like, pander to you having the popular view and me not having one.
For many, many years, you edited a leading magazine. This was in the bad times, definitely during apartheid, Frontline.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our older listeners will remember you. Frontline won numerous journalism mm-hmm. awards. You were the editor and owner. Mm. Tell us a bit about it. I know that you were closed down by the security police.
We weren't closed down. Yeah. We were. No, that's not true. That, these so much gets exaggerated about the old days, not only in this respect, all over the place. The old days gets massively exaggerated these days.
Yeah.
But I got several banning orders. The banning orders were a serious, major nuisance, which, by the way, was quite unusual. For most publishers, a Publications Act banning order wasn't a big nuisance. For some of them, like the sexy banning orders, it meant they whooped because people would, what would happen was that on maybe like March the 12th, on Friday, March the 12th, there would be an article in the Rand Daily Mail. They had a fixed little place on a Friday to tell you what had been banned that week. And you'd see there that, say, Scope had been banned. Scope, volume 14, edition 32.
They showed one woman's nipple and it got
there
banned.
There we are. Yeah. Well, except that it was like bigger or brassier or prouder or something nipples than before, or there was some reason why they picked on that one.
Yeah.
And so when the banning order came, all sorts of people would rush off to their local cafe and CNA or whatever to go and look for a Scope. In the meantime, what has happened is that now, May the 12th, May the 20th, so months after the time that that edition has been banned. So people go rushing off and buy the current edition. The banned one has already been pulped and gone, and nobody's ever going to see it again. So it was quite perverse.
Yeah.
And just more briefly, the other banning orders were political banning orders. Nearly all the publications that got banned were supported by some brand of income from abroad. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you did when you got banned is ring your sponsors in America or in Berlin or very frequently Sweden, Stockholm, whatever, and say, hey, look, you know, the government's running scared. Look what they had to do to us. Kindly double our support. Mm-hmm. I was the one and only guy who was sustained by South African advertising and South African clients and no grant money. And when I got banned, it really, really hurt because all the advertisers pulled out.
How did the banning order work? Was it a gazetted a quick gazetted banning order?
Yeah.
Is that so the government or whoever it was, publications board, said we don't want this article and we're going to ban it? Or give us an idea of what they were banning.
That's about right. That's exactly right.
So I mean, it was tough to run a newspaper or a publication during this time.
Look,
we're talking the 80s, 70s? What
80s. There were two regimes. There was one regime for the big and established publications, which were members of the Newspaper Press Union.
Mm.
For them, you needed like major, big league, heavyweight stuff, which happened in the case of, for example, The World, the paper, the forerunner of what is now the Sowetan.
Yes.
That was famously banned on October the 19th, 1977. Now, that was a declaration by a minister, and in terms of, I think, the suppression of communism or one of those acts, it was a different deal altogether. So to ban the members of the Newspaper Press Union was big stuff. Banning the non-members was like routine stuff. And sometimes, as I say, there would be a little list on a Friday morning in the Rand Daily Mail, exactly on the same place on the front page. And sometimes it was a long list. There could be 30, 40, 50 publications banned in 1 week.
The Frontline was, for how many years did you own it and run it?
12.
Eventually, it was absorbed by...
Eventually, it packed in. It was never a viable economic proposition. It was on the edge from start to finish.
You just enjoyed having a go at the government at the time, didn't you?
It was definitely anti-apartheid. I mean, the oddity... But then again, so was everything. The oddity at that stage is that I was... Then and now, I was not into the idea of dumping on the government. I wanted people in the government to read it and pay attention to something.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that from start to finish.
Wow. You wrote a book, I think, on the Frontline, if I'm not mistaken. I think, is it not called Radical Middle?
Middle. Sort of on Frontline. It's a kind of a memoir of a period which largely covers the Frontline era.
The many books you've written, are they available still, or can one struggle to get them?
I think the probably the practical answer is no. I mean, I've got copies of all of them. Anybody wants them, they're welcome. But you can't walk into a bookshop now and say, give me one. Give
How
me
many
a
books
radical
have you
middle.
Written, then?
19.
Well,
jeez.
I know there's one that you wrote about a white man walking. Do you remember that
one? That wasn't
actually
a book. That was an article. That was a...
60 pages or something. I don't know if it was quite an article.
It was a long article. I love that, actually. In fact, that's one of the...
Tell us a bit about that book.
I went to Cato Manor in Durban. I went at the request of the Cato Manor Development Organ Association, who'd put millions of not only rands but dollars, pounds, marks, the lot, into a Cato Manor development thing. And they wanted some... They wanted some fresh view, if you like. They called it the view from the street. Yep. And they had all their reports from the sociological expert and the medical expert and the all the education, the lot. And they wanted something different. So I gave them something that seriously was different. And I just enjoyed that. It was just lovely. I had just three wonderful days walking around Cato Manor being odd. I mean, some pale person just strolling through the streets of Cato Manor wasn't conventional.
One of the reviews says, it's deliciously pioneering. It symbolizes Africa's clock turning forward. Nice review.
Is he talking of the white man walking? Is
yeah,
that so?
Yeah,
oh, really? Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
You don't know how good your reviews are. No.
No.
Lange, you been there?
Not quite. I haven't actually read it, but I'm just...
No, have you been to Cato Ridge, that area?
No. But I'm just so fascinated. I mean, you're giving a synopsis of the history back in the days, and I'm just thinking about the history that is actually happening now. Do you see any similarity?
Look, it's all part of a continuity. My understanding is that the world moves forward, but it doesn't move in one nice, long, straight line. It moves forward bit by erratic bit, in turning and circling and tumbling and somersaulting, and we move forward. Where we move forward, if I can really sum up maybe a large thing briefly, we move forward in terms of the relationships between people. That, to me, is the thing that matters most about a nation or about humanity, is how people are relating to people. That is not necessarily reflected in the politics of around you, but there are ways in which it impacts. So my sense is that our relationship as people, South African people, is great. I think it's a wonderful relationship. There's no place I can go to now where I'm not going to expect a fine relationship with the people around me. Mm. And that, to me, has worked greatly forward. What hasn't worked very much is the politics. The politics goes in much more jagged circles. We had lousy politics then, we got lousy politics now.
While we're talking politics, let's talk about a book that you wrote called Demagarchy.
Demagarchy.
Mm. It's putting politics in its place. I think that's really
the slogan I used.
Yeah, the slogan. Give us an idea. I mean, you were very kindly lent me a copy, and I waded through it. It's not very long. It's so interesting.
Waded through it. I don't think I want to quote
it. No,
no,
you can.
It's a tiny little book. You can put it in your pocket and you have to wade through it.
Dennis, I've got to compliment you. I mean, it's well thought out. It's tough reading. You can't watch TV and read this at the same time.
No, you can't do that. That's true.
You even write. You said that if anyone doesn't finish the something about you'll give their money back if they don't finish the book or something.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
I said I think if they did finish the book and they didn't believe that there was a better way of making things work than we do now, then I'd give them their money back.
This is in fact you got to
the end and you don't think that you can have your money back.
No, I don't want my money back. I didn't pay for it. You've said that if a reader reads the whole book, they won't think rubbish. Not that you'll sing. I call it Hosannas.
Yes.
But if you still think rubbish, I'll send your money back. That's a challenge.
Oh, there we are. Yeah. I'm glad you remind me of that. That's quite good. That's nice. I would do that. If you get to the end of that book, anybody who starts that, there's a long history of like private patriots in suburban studies, as I've put it, I think, in that book, coming up with political panaceas. And, of course, they all bull. And this is when, and it's just not bull. It takes quite some time before you realize that it isn't bull. A lot of the ones that are really pointless, when you sit around, there's so many dinner parties that I've sat around, and I'm quite sure you have as well, where somebody's saying, the way to fix everything is this. And they've got it there in 5 minutes' time. It's something like a qualified franchise or a committee of wise men or something. You must take politics away from this dreaded thing, the people who make all these mistakes and vote for wrong parties. You must take it away from them and give it to some brainy guys. And then there's, now, all those things are disasters. I mean, they were wonderful dinner party conversation for those who believe them. And everybody goes, I'm thinking, oh, yes, there's hope, there's hope. But the moment you walk two steps in that stuff, it falls apart. Now, what I've been telling you there, Gary, in that book, is pretty much the opposite. At the beginning, it's a little difficult to figure out what is this guy saying. Yeah. That's why I make the point that if you read that whole book and you still think that there's nothing in it, that's when you get your money back. But actually, the next step, which is coming up now, goes a long way further. I'm not going to give you your money back if you don't think there's something in it. Yeah. I'm going to give you your money back if you aren't, if you don't swallow it.
Well, I'd like to recommend, Dennis, I'd like to recommend this book. I know Lionel's an avid reader.
Yeah.
Demagogy, Lionel, this is for you next.
Thank you.
To get a copy of this, we'll give out Dennis
the
details.
You better move yours along. You don't have to give that one back to
me. I've made a few notes in the book. I hope Dennis doesn't mind, but we won't get through it. There's no such word as demagogy. That's your word.
Yes.
Quickly, just in a nutshell.
All right. Yeah. All right. Why do you know anarchy means the rule of none? You know oligarchy means the rule of few. You know monarchy means the rule of one. Why do you not know demagogy? Because there's never actually been the rule of all.
Yes.
What we have is a kind of a baby steps towards it that we call democracy. That isn't really rule. We're told now. We're told. All of us are told. Palesa and Lionel as well as Gary here. And everybody sitting outside and everybody listening. We're all told we, the people, rule. Mm. Well, what do you rule? Where can you use your vote to achieve something that you want out of society? Can you get a speed bump put in your road by using a vote for this purpose? Mm-hmm. If there's guys who say, yes, we're happy, and other people who say, no, we don't want a speed bump, is there some way that you can use your, quote, power, unquote, as a citizen to resolve that? No, there's nothing. There's no place in this society, I mean, I should think any society in the world, where someone on the political pyramid, someone with the ability to allocate, to make public decisions, is scared of any one of us, of our vote. Nobody that we can go to and say, listen, if you don't do X or Y or Z, we're going to take our vote and give it to the opposition. They'll laugh. If there's a million of you, then they won't laugh. But then that's making decisions to please categories and segments of society, not to please you or your...
So in a nutshell, demagogy means that the people are rulers of,
yep,
of the leaders, really.
The people, yes. The problem, yeah, a big part of the problem with demagogy is as soon as people hear that, they think, yeah, well, of course, that's bull. Because the idea is, it's been frequently said that, of course, you can't have the government of the people, by the people, for the people, because all those things are impossible. The people can't be governing. Mm. So that's why you have to actually read the book before it can make any sense to you. And
I'd love to continue this discussion, but we have to move on.
Yep.
Everyone's wanting to know about Beckett's Trek. That was on TV. I remember seeing it. Everyone's seen it. You came in then in 1994. Tell us about Beckett's Trek.
I love that. Yeah. It was a great time.
We all loved it.
It was a very funny thing. It was also very unfair in a way. I'd been a print journalist. I mean, I'd been a writing guy all along. That had been my business. I'd never had anything to do with any of these electronic goodies that we're sitting in front of our mouths now. But I then, the SABC 3, which was at that stage a tiny, even now it's a tiny little channel, but at that stage it was tiny. It was called NNTV. I forget what the NNN stood for. And that was the smallest, the little baby of the SABC fold. Mm. And they, the chap who'd recently been appointed economics editor had a kind of an implosion. He decided he just couldn't do it one morning. It was a Tuesday morning. He couldn't do it. Mm. And he phoned me and he said, please, will I go and be economics editor for a program called Face the Facts?
Mm-hmm.
The gimmick was that we had a fax sitting there and people were meant to be able to ask their questions and I'd reel them off the fax and then read out the question and then put it to whoever, the Minister of Finance, as it sometimes was, or some financial spokesman speaking to me. Mm-hmm. I have to say here, I know nothing about finance. There's nobody in this country who understands finance less than me. So it wasn't an elite program. It was like, you know, this was dumb people being represented by a dumb person, asking the Minister of Finance the dumb questions that you're scared to ask him. And then one day, it's a Tuesday, I get to my office, there's a message, I've been doing the Face of X now for 6 or 8 months, there's a message saying, you don't need to come in tonight, we've cancelled the program. So I phone, I write to the then general manager. I say, listen, you want to cancel the program, it's your business, but hell, this is not the very polite way of cancelling the program. So he says, sorry. He says, by the way, have you got any idea? We've got to do something else to fill that space. So I said, well, why don't you have some guy wandering around the country being a little bit irreverent? He says, yeah, good. And that started. That was 7 years that thing operated.
Where did you
get to? So it started the next week. That was a Tuesday. Mm. That Tuesday, they had made some excuse. They had something else at that time. Mm. And then from the next Tuesday, I did it there were series over 7 years.
I remember seeing I saw you in every one of them, but one of them was you at a rave, of all things. That was the golden years of the rave, and you landed up in a rave. I think you probably quite enjoyed that one.
I went with my daughter, and I came away saying that I'm quite happy for my daughter to go to the rave, which wasn't what I was in, a sprightly youth of about 50 or something, I suppose. Yeah. And it wasn't what like a 50-year-old was supposed to say. You know, you were meant to say, well, this is terrible, horrible stuff. I was never sorry, and she was never sorry.
You were always controversial. That's it.
Well, I did believe. I went to this rave. It was enjoyable. I'm sure some people were smoking dope somewhere and taking ecstasy and stuff like that. But they didn't. So I don't know. And by the way, it did strike me that there's one point to be made in favor of ecstasy as compared, or maybe dope as opposed to the tipple that the traditionals amongst us are allowed to have as much as we like of, provided we don't get behind a steering wheel. The one difference is that we're seeing two telegraph poles. The guys on the ecstasy and the dope, I understand, are seeing one telegraph pole. You don't, your vision doesn't disappear out of you.
I think it was Mail and Guardian again. They quoted, they wrote a review and they said that you are quirky, opinionated, sometimes angry, and a journalist with attitude. That's what you wanted to hear.
I've never seen that either. You've got a wonderful collection here, whatever you've been doing.
We do our research on our
research. We do our research, yeah. We go all out.
Wonderful time in your life, those 7 years?
Oh, yes, I love that time.
Where were you taken to? All over the country, I think you do.
It wasn't only the country, it was anywhere. We did all over the world. We went to India, we went to Nigeria, we went to Britain, we went to Australia, we went to Cuba. We had a wonderful time in Cuba. I couldn't believe the Cuba time. And by the way, Cuba was so honest and upright about this thing. Another government, Malaysia, had asked me a couple of weeks before, had said, come and do a program on us. So I said, yes, fine, thanks, that's great, lovely idea. I'd like to see the following guy, who included people who didn't agree with the government. And then Malaysia promptly cancelled the invitation. Cuba gives me the invitation. Cuba, then being a classic, one of the three, I think, or four remaining at the time, communist states, says, come and have a look. And I say, well, I want to see this guy. And they didn't blink an eyelid. They said, sure, come. And they never interfered with anything that I had to do. I'm not saying Cuba was a great place. It had its pluses and it also had its minuses, but it was just, to me, a really interesting experience being there.
So many of these programs have been replicated, but no one goes to the depth that you did. And, I don't want to blow smoke up your ass, but you really did a great job in doing that. It was really, it was a cut above, so interesting.
To me, the distinguishing feature, I think, between mine and the others, is a lot of places I've been to, you'd get the image that I'm particularly thinking of is a bit of a rude image. I'm thinking of getting onto a river of shit, in Nigeria, in Lagos. I'm in a little canoe thing on a river of shit. The river is full of shit. Feces, if you like. But that's what the river is. Yeah. And, so a lot of people have done the stuff of going to the odd place. But I don't frankly think that there's been that much in the way of asking the offbeat question or coming at it from a funny angle.
Yeah. You're now doing Stoop Talk, which was done by who before?
James Clark for 22 years.
Yeah. Hopefully you'll do it for 22 years. Yeah, you'll be in your 90s.
James Clark was only 60 when he started.
Lovely column. Pick it up. To our listeners, it's in the Independent Online.
The Star. It's the oldest, I think. I'd love somebody to be able to either confirm or correct this, but I think it's the oldest column in South Africa at this point. The coastal papers being older papers, but I don't think any one of them has had a column of more than 100 years old.
How tricky is it to think of a new column every week? You've got to think of a new subject.
This must be at least the 20th series of columns that I've done. Mm. And I've now, like, born into the fact that I'm not, I don't get, my pulse doesn't accelerate about column deadline approaching. There's never a problem in finding a subject. The problem is making something of the subject, making it make sense in 600 words. Frequently, the column is reducing it from 1,000 to 600, because in 1,000 you can say what you want to say. Now you've got to reduce it and fit it into the space. That's quite a good discipline.
We haven't got much time left. Talk to us about what you're up to. Can we get you to talk to us, to speak to the public? Are you on the speakers list?
If anybody wanted me to speak, I would, I suppose. If I
Well, maybe you've gone a bit underground and people have forgotten about
you. Wait a little bit, because the thing that you were talking about, people have forgotten. That's absolutely true. Yeah. And that's fine, Mummy. But,
no, it shouldn't be, because you've got a lot to contribute. Come on, Dennis.
That celebrity thing never hung with me.
It's not celebrity. It's just, you walk around with this wealth of knowledge on every topic.
Well, just returning to where you went to, that thing about demagogy, I cannot tell you how much time I spent on this. It's lunatic. It's absolutely upsetting, the quantity of time. But it does come to a conclusion in not a long time, Gary. Yeah. I'm going to be presenting that thing in a way that you're going to not just say, this is interesting, this is interesting. You're going to say, yes, that's where we want to go.
This could go
and
in.
Then I'll be damn talking about
that
it to
book,
anybody.
That book you should be discussing in Europe and all over. That's not just combined.
That demagogy, that was only about the eighth book in the series, I think, on how to make politics work. Mm-hmm. I've now gone several steps further, and each step gets the increase, the gradient gets a hell of a lot higher. I'm in a much more advanced place now, and it's about to emerge.
Okay, if we want to get hold of Dennis Beckett, where do
dbeckett@global.co.za.
No website or anything like that.
There sort of is, but I don't really watch it very much. And Facebook, it's terrible. I just the other day.
No, I've sent you a friend request and you ignored it. You've got, I think you're over your limit. You're up to 5,000 just now. 5,000 friends. Yeah. I think you could get to many more. Just accept my friend request. Unless you don't want to be friends with me.
I wouldn't.
Now, I'm not sure whether you or I are going to bollocks Lionel for that.
We've run out of time. I think we could have gone on for a while. Thank you so much, Dennis Beckett. Gareth Cliff, I think, wants to speak to you as well, so you'll be back.
And, that's great. Well, I've met you guys. Nice to know you.
Yeah, thank you for being on the Laws of Life. Lines, we've got 10 seconds.
And we've got a WhatsApp from Linda Kumalo, who says she's enjoying our podcast. She's listening live. Thank you very much for your support, Linda Kumalo.
Good. Keep doing it. Thanks for this. Bye.
Great. Thanks. CliffCentral.com.